You're listening to the Apex Fantasy Football Podcast.
Hello, fellow fantasy football fanatics. We're back with part two of our favorite players to draft in each round. We're going to go through rounds 10 through 18 because there are 18 rounds in this regular Apex Fantasy League draft. And we're going to go through each round and tell you our favorite players to draft in each round. But we did a little bit differently this time. We have all picked our favorite players in each round. We are all assigned three rounds, but we don't know who the other people picked. So I don't know who Mike picked. Mike doesn't know who Dalton picked, etc. and so forth. So let's dive right in. Mike, round 10, who do we like?
So there's multiple guys that I like in round 10, but I think my favorite selection there is Zach Moss. It kind of goes back to our last guest, Sean Siegel, who came on the pod and really explained zero running back really well. But with a lot of these zero running back candidates, what we're really looking for is production. And Zach Moss produced really well in college. And he isn't a great athlete, but he checks the production boxes through the on the ground and through the air. And like Singletary, he's also a third round selection and in a much better draft class. So a comp for him is somebody like David Montgomery, who obviously went before Singletary in last year's draft. So Singletary, also a third round pick, and I think that Moss could have a much bigger role than people are anticipating. He, through training camp, has received rave reviews from the beat writers about his rushing ability, about his ability in the passing game, and they've also predicted that he'll be a lot more involved than many people are anticipating.
So, Mike, I remember a few episodes ago when we talked about rookie running backs, we were all kind of lukewarm on Zach Moss. What do you attribute your turnaround in opinion regarding to Zach Moss to?
I think that hearing what the beat writers have to say and how involved he'll be, and I believe in one practice, Singletary fumbled and Zach Moss really impressed playing all the downs. So hearing the beat writers expect him to be a lot more involved. And also, Singletary performed well through the air last season, but Zach Moss actually had a higher college target share than Singletary did. So there's a chance that he's a better pure rusher and a better pure receiver than Singletary is, and he's a lot cheaper. So when it comes to these zero running back targets, he's the kind of guy that we're looking for.
Mike, I'm interested to hear your perspective. Was Zach Moss chosen over a guy like Mecole Hardman because of the fact that you're kind of targeting running backs in that range, or was there a specific reason for that?
I think that's a fair point. I do very much like Hardman and I like Slayton in this range, those 2 second year breakouts who we can expect to be a lot better in year two. But yeah, at this point in the draft, generally in my drafts, I am targeting running backs here, and Moss checks all the boxes. When you go a few rounds later, there aren't guys like Moss available. And sometimes maybe Hardman will slide, maybe Darius Slayton will slide, or a Mike Williams pre-injury. So there are other options at wide receiver when I feel like Moss really starts standing out after maybe a Philip Lindsay or a Matt Breida has come off the board.
Yeah, I definitely don't hate that pick. I actually had someone else, and I have a feeling Dalton had someone similar. I think you just mentioned him, Mecole Hardman. Mecole Hardman, I forget who tweeted this, but for you poker players out there, he's kind of like the straight flush draw off the flop where you don't have a made hand yet, but there are so many outs that it's really just a monster hand that you can bet almost anything on. With Hardman, now I know when Watkins and Hill were both healthy, he saw like 18 targets in 13 games or something, not exactly the volume you want anytime in your draft, let alone in the 10th round, which is still relatively early. But without Tyreek Hill in the lineup, he was on pace for 984 yards and 8 touchdowns as a rookie. And going, being the deep threat, catching passes from Patrick Mahomes, if Tyreek Hill or Watkins is hurt. And, you know, Watkins, I don't know if you guys have seen the reports in him in training camp, but he's, as he's being interviewed, he kind of sounds like the old guru who knows his time has passed and he's passing on the torch. He's already admitted he's not going to see a ton of volume. And after last year, I mean, I don't think he had more than, 63 yards in a game after week one, zero touchdowns. And when we talk about second-year breakouts, guys, we all love, Hardman fits the mold as a guy who had a really impressive rookie year. He was on pace for, 48 catches and 984 yards, you know, nearly 20 yards per reception. Just a really, really fantastic rookie season. And I don't think we can pass up his upside, even though he's not quote unquote made hand yet. Going back to the straight flush analogy, I think Hardman is a guy who's hard to pass up in that range for his upside.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Totally agree with you there. I think he's an interesting guy there. I'm going to move on to 11th round. And I thought this was a really interesting round to be in because there's actually a ton of guys that I'm targeting in drafts around this range. And as much as I wanted to choose a guy like Daryl Henderson as my guy in the 11th round, with the recent reports out of training camp that, you know, he suffered a hamstring injury, which is not exactly the injury that we want to see in training camp because sometimes it can linger a bit. And there's a little bit uncertainty there. It looks like he'll be ready for week one. But again, with the uncertainty, I'm going to pivot and I'm going to go at Noah Fant. He's someone that profiles as someone who can absolutely break out in his year two. We've seen it the past couple of years. You see it with the George Kittle a couple of years ago. Last year, we saw it with Mark Andrews, where these guys are getting drafted in double-digit rounds, and they really become league winners for you at that point, getting you a tight end who can produce as a top five guy. And I've wrote an article about Noah Fant earlier in the year about guys who have over 40 targets in year one and also have over 8 yards per target. He fits an exclusive list in which every single one of those players within their career hit a top six tight end finish. And we know that, you know, players going into the year two, they tend to see that breakout there. He was a 21-year-old rookie, so he really checks all the boxes that we're looking for in a tight end. Now, I guess there's some argument that, you know, Noah Fant is in an offense that may not necessarily thrive, but again, you have a guy like Drew Lock, who is a wild card. We could see Drew Lock do well with some of the weapons there. Cortland Sutton should actually help out Noah Fant as well as Jerry Jeudy. So I think that we're not necessarily looking for, you know, 120 targets for Noah Fant, but if he gets close to 100, we can see something similar to what Mark Andrews did last year. And he finished as a top five tight end last year and broke out all over the place.
I think a concern with Fant is that adding Jerry Jeudy in the draft and just how impressive he's been in camp. I've seen beat writers talk about how some of the veteran wide receivers on the team are going to him for tips. Today, even as we record, he had a couple of drops, but he also had a couple incredible catches, including one for a touchdown. Everyone's really impressed with him. And with Fant, I think we're hoping that, you know, they signed Gordon, they have Lindsay, they have Freeman. I don't know if they're going to be in the top 10, maybe not even top 15 in terms of pass attempts in the league. And if we're talking about a guy who's third on the team in targets on a run heavy team, we might not see the volume that we want there, but I'm not willing to bet against Fant's talent and rookie year production, especially in round 11. He would be a good target, I think, for people who draft someone like Evan Engram, who have really injury riddled pasts, or someone like Hunter Henry. In fact, I think he'd be a good tight end too for pretty much anyone, or maybe a tight end one by committee if you decide to issue an early round tight end. Mike, what do you think about Fant?
I think Fant's excellent, and I think that he's the type of player that regardless of who's around him, he's such an athletic freak, and he was so good in year one that he's going to demand some targets. So I'm not too worried about the target competition, but I actually went with another player for round 11. It's not that I don't like Fant, but there are many really good late round tight ends available. I went with Preston Williams. Preston Williams is a guy that I think people are kind of ignoring because of his draft position. If you've been following my stuff, I've obviously been banging the table for him. His production as a rookie can't be ignored. He led the Dolphins in targets through 8 games as an undrafted rookie. I don't know if that's ever happened before. Maybe like Marquise Colston did it, but this guy has size. He has college production. He's really not your typical undrafted rookie. His primary concern this season was returning from the ACL, but he's back practicing without restrictions, and beat writers are raving that he's back and potentially better than ever. So heading into year two, he suffered that ACL tear early enough in the season, like Cooper Kupp. I believe they both suffered the injury in week 8. So it may be overstated, and he's obviously the type of guy that we like targeting on our teams.
And when it comes to extrapolation, I'm not always huge. And, you know, if they play 3 games and extrapolating to a 16-game season, that's not always actionable. But Preston Williams played 8 games. He played half the season. And so if we just double his production, 120 targets and nearly 900 yards, he would have had 6 touchdowns. Basically, his rookie year would have been almost identical to someone like Terry McLaurin's, who is going you know, multiple, maybe, what is this? We're doing round 11. He's going six rounds earlier, seven rounds earlier in some drafts. And like I always say with Preston Williams, if his production had occurred in the second half of last year rather than the first half, then he would be going probably three rounds higher, in my opinion. Are we sure we don't like Sony Michel in this round, Dalton?
I think someone like another guy I want to mention, because I do think this is such a good and a rich round. Tony Pollard is someone that I was really hesitating on whether I should choose him or not, because he is in such a good offense. And we saw him be the only rookie running back last year to be both efficient in the running and the receiving game. You know, all it takes is a little bit of, you know, whether it's, you know, in a COVID-rated season for Zeke to, you know, either get hurt or something to happen to him, for Tony Pollard to really be a league winner and someone that, you know, can absolutely dominate in your lineups week in, week out. And I think there's also opportunity for some flex play appeal on a week-to-week basis, maybe getting 8 to 10 touches behind Zeke in that offense as well. So I like him a lot too.
Pollard's another kind of guy who, with a Zeke injury, could be a league winner, but I don't know, might be too early for a handcuff if you draft Zeke. I know JJ Zachariasen has done some really good work on handcuffs, and it's unclear as to whether they actually help, but Pollard, whether you own Zeke or not, might be a really good pick. Why don't we go on to round 12, where I have a guy who I don't know if either of you picked. I know in our private conversations, I've been hyping this guy a little bit with Mike, and that is Chase Edmonds. We had a one-game sample size, but what a one game it was. I think over 120 yards, three touchdowns. And then, of course, the next game when everyone started him in fantasy, pulled his hamstring after one carry or something like that. But beat writers in camp have said, you know, he looks incredible, shocker. But more importantly, I mean, Kenyon Drake is already in a walking boot, even though it's just precautionary. But Drake has never seen more than 170 carries in a season. We don't exactly know for sure if he's going to be the every down back, and Cliff Kingsbury has said Chase Edmonds has all the tools to be a starter in this league. I don't think there is a scenario where Edmonds doesn't see at least, you know, 30% of the running back touches, even when Drake is healthy, most likely. But if Drake were to get nicked up like he has in the past, you know, we're really basing Drake's production on a few games at the end of last year. And if you look at his game log, it's pretty impressive, but that four touchdown game really is the one that, in my opinion, somewhat inflates his value. I mean, this is a guy going in the second round right now in Apex drafts. I just don't think that Drake is going to be an every down workhorse that belongs in the second round, which automatically means most likely that Edmonds is going to be more than just a handcuff. I think Edmonds is a Tony Pollard plus, because he is not only a great handcuff on an offense where he has been an every down back, although in a small sample size, but his coach has said he can be, but he's behind a guy who we don't even know is going to see the lion's share of the work.
Yeah, I think Edmonds is a really good player. And I mean, he kind of fits in that Tony Pollard kind of cohort where there's all these guys that if there was an injury in front of them, they would just be extremely valuable. We have Edmonds, we have Tony Pollard, Duke Johnson may fit in there, and another guy who's in this round, Boston Scott, who at the end of last year, we saw him get a lot of work with Miles Sanders receiving a lot of touches, but also Miles Sanders was kind of nicked up at that time. And if you look at Boston Scott's athleticism, he's a surprisingly good athlete, and he showed some prowess in the passing game. Over the last four games of last season, he actually averaged 20.5 PPR points. So maybe he showed he can do it a little bit longer than Chase Edmonds can. And the Eagles haven't been proactive about adding another back. And the beat writer reports have also been really favorable about Boston Scott. So I think these zero running back squads want to target as many of the Chase Edmonds, Boston Scott, Tony Pollard type of guys as possible.
Yeah, I mean, this is what zero running back's based on. It is the idea that one of these running backs is going to get hurt, fall out of favor, and we are going to bet on that uncertainty. So we want to take some of those flyer lottery tickets on guys who, if they even get 50% of the job, can be startable in your RB2 spot. Dalton, what do you have to say about our friend Boston Scott and maybe even Chase Edmonds?
I mean, the only reason I can't get on the Chase Edmonds train is simply because Kenyon Drake tweeted out that he's going to help his owners win fantasy titles. So clearly,
you know what? That's fine. There's no room for you on the train anyway, Dalton. So take another train.
You know what? Fine. I'll make my own train over here, and I'm just going to, you know, Devy off here, and I'm going to go with TJ Hawkinson. I think that he's a really interesting pick. There had been a report last week that, you know, something about him battling injuries, not 100%, but reports out of camp every single day are extremely, extremely positive of TJ Hawkinson. This is someone who, if we're looking at over the last like 10 draft classes, he may have been arguably the best tight end prospect we've seen come out in some time. Last year, we saw him in his first game when he was fully healthy. He absolutely balled out. He had over 130 yards, the best tight end game from a rookie in the first game ever. So we saw his potential there. And we also know this is an offense that last year, you know, when Stafford was healthy, they were top five offense in passing yards per game. So not only is Galladay there and Marvin Jones, but they definitely need a third guy to step up. And TJ Hawkinson can absolutely do that. And we shouldn't be as surprised, you know, if he is fully healthy, that he can absolutely make that jump and, you know, ascend into that category heading into this year too. So I think TJ Hawkinson is another strong candidate there as a late round tight end guy.
Yeah, Hawkinson's great. I think he's definitely a guy to target for people that may have a weakness at tight end. If you don't get one of those top four tight ends, then you're not sure you're going to get that elite production. And Hawkinson is a guy, is a top 100 pick, and a really, really good prospect that could have a year two explosion. I'll jump into round 13, where there are actually a couple guys that I like, but we'll stick with a zero running back trend, and I'll go with Damian Harris. He's just been the talk of Patriots camp. He's catching the ball out of the backfield. He looks like the Patriots' best running back, according to several beat writers. And many forget that at Alabama, he out-touched Josh Jacobs during their final season together, and there wasn't really a huge difference in their production. So maybe we think that Damian Harris is a little worse than he actually is. With Sony Michel likely to start the season on the PUP list, Harris is another one of those guys that could be really cheap and could be a source of a lot of running back touches.
I always thought Harris was, I watch a lot of college football. I always thought Harris was as good as Josh Jacobs. And it seems very hard for rookies to get out of that. They almost seem to start automatically in Bill Belichick's doghouse, but Sony Michel, I mean, how do you see 247 carries and finish as like the RB31? That's one of the most unbelievable statistics I've ever heard. We know James White isn't an every down back. Lamar Miller, I'm not convinced he's going to make the final roster, as I'm sure many aren't. Damian Harris, on a day-to-day basis, has looked like the early down guy who can kind of play in any situation that you ask him to. I mean, this was like a two-star, three-star prospect that got work ahead of Josh Jacobs, a much more heralded prospect for those of you who follow college football recruiting. And I don't see why not, after spending a third-round pick on him, why he can't, after a full season, be the main guy. I mean, we don't even know if Sony Michel is going to play this year, let alone if there's almost no way he's effective coming off an injury in one of the most ineffective seasons last year. Damian Harris, I think, is a great zero RB pick. I do have to warn you, his ADP is going to be rising very quickly. I wouldn't be surprised if a week from now, instead of round 13, you're going to have to get him in round 10 or 11. Dalton, what do you think about Damian Harris? Do you have anyone different in this round?
No, this is actually who I chose as well. I really like Damian Harris for some of the reasons you mentioned about his college profile and, you know, what he did alongside a guy like Josh Jacobs. And we also have to take into account there's another prospect there who potentially is going to be, you know, not, if not the top, but one of the top three running backs coming out next year, in Najee Harris. And he essentially was getting more touches than all those guys. So that matters in a sense when, you know, you're at such a pristine program like Alabama to be able to get those touches. And he also got some work in the receiving game. Like, I'm not sure this is a guy who is essentially going to be a massive, you know, threat in the receiving game, but he has shown the capability to at least be serviceable. And, you know, all he's really looking for is opportunity. When you're the Patriots and you're drafting a running back in the third round after taking a running back in the first round, they clearly liked him. And last year was kind of a redshirt year for him. So I really expect him, you know, positive reports out of camp that he can really do a lot of things. And essentially he can profile as a workhorse for him. If Sony Michel is not up to par with his injury, he can absolutely take over that backfield.
If you guys aren't going to talk about another guy in this round, then I have to. You guys already know I'm a big Alan Lazard fan, and he's another guy that wasn't drafted and just doesn't get the respect he deserves. But regardless of whether people give him that respect, draft position, yeah, it matters. But Lazard dominated in college, has an 87th percentile speed score. He's really heavy, which we care a lot about. He's 6'5", like 223 pounds. His breakout age was really impressive. He dominated in college. And last year, he led the Packers in yards per target. Aaron Rodgers was trying to get him on the field more frequently. I do not think that the odds of MVS being better than Lazard are very high. If somebody like Devontae Adams goes down, Lazard could have a really, really good season. And even if he doesn't, we've seen Rodgers in the past support two wide receivers and a Randall Cobb finishing as a fringe wide receiver one, maybe mid wide receiver two with Rodgers. Maybe those days are gone, but in the 13th round, taking a chance on Alan Lazard is a good decision.
And I could totally see an Aaron Rodgers, you know, FU pissed off campaign about drafting Jordan Love and Adrian Owen said, screw this, I'm going back to my MVP form. I mean, that's kind of one thing. It might be sound spiteful, but that's kind of one thing that would make him great. And Lazard could definitely be a beneficiary of that. Why don't we go on to round 14? And this is Dalton's round. Dalton, who do we like in round 14? Why is it Will Lutz?
Oh, well, I can't believe you're reading my mind over here, but clearly, here's the thing about Will Lutz. Last year, he didn't score as the number one kicker, but he was the number two, and he's in such a pristine offense, so we want to be targeting him as a kicker. All right, all jokes aside here, we're looking at a guy like Paris Campbell, who, one thing that we've touched on, and if you've listened to any of our podcasts before, obviously, we are super high on second-year wide receivers and how they're undervalued, because we know they're going to get more opportunity in year two. So Paris Campbell was someone who, as a prospect, he had some interesting aspects to his profile. He's extremely athletic. His weight, his height, weight size is pretty intriguing from that stance. And he was also a second round pick. Last year, he battled a little bit of injuries, so it's really hard to get a full conclusion of what Paris Campbell's rookie season was without him being fully healthy. So I think there's a question mark in terms of that there. But at the same time, reports out of Indianapolis camp has been amazing. And let's be honest, like there's opportunity there for Paris Campbell in that offense. We know T.Y. Hilton is a very good receiver, but he's approaching age 30. They drafted Michael Pittman, but we know rookie wide receivers don't necessarily, you know, garner many targets in their rookie season. So there's absolutely a lot of buzz there for Paris Campbell to be a guy who in the 14th round can absolutely outproduce his draft position. He outproduced Terry McLaurin in college. And, you know, we've seen Terry McLaurin already have a very strong rookie season. He's someone that we're very high on for year two. So the fact that he's able to outproduce him in college is something that, you know, should matter in terms of, you know, how we potentially view him as a talent in this offense. And I think he has a chance to, you know, really do well at his ADP.
I'm very glad that Dalton went with Paris Campbell. That was a must there. This guy is really potentially special, and we don't want to ignore him after an injury-plagued rookie year. I don't know if I've seen anybody who has as much love from beat writers this offseason as Paris Campbell. Even Philip Rivers said the sky is the limit. And look, at this stage of Philip Rivers' career, he's not going downfield a whole lot. And T.Y. Hilton plays on the outside. Yeah, he'll run some slants and throw it over the middle, but you could argue that in this offense, Paris Campbell will play the Keenan Allen role. And it may not be likely, but there is a chance with, I mean, we're not sure that Jack Doyle is going to get that many targets. There is a chance that Paris Campbell leads this team in targets and he's available in round 14. So he's a very intriguing pick. There's also Bryce Love, who is moving up draft boards and still available in round 14. Obviously, with Darius Geis being released, there are a lot of opportunities up for grabs in the Redskins backfield. Bryce Love had an unbelievable start to his college career, which makes him intriguing. He hasn't been the same player since, but he has a lot of speed. There is a lack of competition, and suddenly the Redskins coaches are hyping him up. So there's definitely incentive for them to see what they have in Bryce Love, give him some playing time. Is there a chance that they run an old Adrian Peterson every game and get Antonio Gibson involved in passing downs? Yes, but in round 14, it may be worth targeting the upside of a Bryce Love who could be involved this season.
I think we forget that. I challenge you, dear listener, to go look at Bryce Love's healthy college season and compare them to someone like Jonathan Taylor. Bryce Love, I think going into the year he got hurt, was one of the top five favorites to win the Heisman. They built their offense around him at Stanford like Wisconsin did with Jonathan Taylor. And he suffered some bad injuries, not as bad as someone maybe like who was the guy on the 49ers that we loved?
Marshawn Lattimore.
Yeah, it wasn't like it's not a Marshawn Lattimore type situation, but still, you know, it's taken him a couple of years to recover. But without Geist there, you know, maybe we could see them going old school and bang AP into the ground. But Bryce Love was really, really good. And Dalton, you said that Hilton, and to your point, Hilton is going to be, you said approaching 30. He's going to be 31 in November, right? And if anyone watched Phillip Rivers last year, and especially if you were a Mike Williams owner, you knew how frustrating it was watching Phillip Rivers just chuck it up deep, basically entirely for grabs, like a on a wing and a prayer. So Paris Campbell might be the Keenan Allen type guy. I mean, he's another guy like Damian Harris where I think you're going to have to spend an earlier and earlier pick on him. But you could make an argument for him up in that tier, I think, with someone like Mecole Hardman, who we talked about multiple rounds earlier, or even Preston Williams, and maybe even above those guys, just based on reading the tea leaves, the stage of Phillip Rivers' career, and just how good he's looked in camp.
If you're worried about his draft position going up, go draft today at apexfantasyleagues.com. Before everybody else hears this info, get the best opportunity to buy these guys at the cheapest cost before their ADP rises.
Yeah, we're hosting multiple drafts a day. Draft four times a day and get four Paris Campbells in the 13th round. It's not that hard. Let's go on to round 15. I think we all have the same guy here. He is a tight end for the New York Jets. A guy who, if you listen to this podcast, you might have heard of. His name is Christopher Herndon. I'm just going to let Dalton take this one. Dalton, why don't you have a Chris Herndon-gasm on the podcast once again for us?
Wow. I mean, when you called him Christopher, that just about did it for me. So let me tell you about Chris Herndon. I mean, there's something bittersweet about a guy who, you know, is rising up draft boards as quickly as Chris Herndon is. I remember, you know, a month or two ago, this is a guy you can constantly get in the 18th round. And now we're starting to see him rise even more. So along with someone like Paris Campbell, like Chris Herndon is someone you absolutely want to jump on as soon as possible, because the closer we're getting to season, the more positive reports have been at Chris Herndon, and people are really starting to catch on to what Chris Herndon's potential is this year. So Chris Herndon is someone who, as a rookie, and we look at what he did as a rookie specifically, he basically had one of the best rookie seasons we've seen from a tight end in the past two decades. This was a guy who saw over 50 targets, and he had over 8 yards per target. And as I mentioned with Noah Fant, you know, all those guys who've done that, they've hit a top six season at one point in their career. Now, Chris Herndon, this is technically his third season, but if we look at last year, he really only played 18 snaps. So it's really hard to give him that full quote unquote year. So like with a guy like Fant, or a guy like Hawkinson, Chris Herndon, you can make the argument that he's heading into quote unquote second year in an offense where there's not necessarily too many targets there for Herndon. I mean, he's messing with a guy like Jameson Crowder, Denzel Mims, Breshad Perriman, guys who, you know, may be solid, but they're not going to be in the way of a talent like Chris Herndon from potentially getting, you know, the targets that he needs to really break out. And I think that, you know, based on price point, when we're looking back at the end of the season, Chris Herndon is absolutely somebody who could, you know, finish in the top, you know, seven, six tight ends this year.
I think the argument for him is even stronger than that, right? We're talking about Denzel Mims, a rookie who now has a torn hamstring, like a rookie in a COVID shortened offseason. It's already hard for rookies, and now he's sitting out these precious training camp reps when there's no preseason. I think we can probably write off Denzel Mims for the first half of 2020, and now we're competing with guys like Jameson Crowder and Breshad Perriman, who part of me has this like guilty man crush on Breshad Perriman. He was a guy I was considering talking about on this podcast, but I'm not that sick yet. So I think when we're talking about the Jets, Herndon, and of course the beat writers from camp have been raving about him, right? He's been making plays every single day. And I think it's a viable strategy if you just want to hammer running back and wide receiver to take in the later rounds, Fant, Hawkinson, and Herndon. And one of those three guys is likely to be a top 10 tight end. Maybe you even platoon them. Mike, did you have Chris Herndon in this round as well?
Of course. I didn't even write down anybody else. Herndon is the guy. And there's really not much to worry about. He should get a lot of targets, and he's at a very cheap cost. He's rising up boards. People are ranking him higher. So grab him while you can. But Herndon, what Herndon did during his rookie year, is certainly something that could lead to him being a top five tight end at some point, and that could certainly happen this season.
Awesome. Why don't you see, who do you have for round 16, Mike?
So round 16 was a bit of a difficult one. I have three names written down, but I'm going to go with Laviska Shenault.
That's Shenault who I had too.
Had a stunning sophomore college season, and he really checks a lot of the boxes we're looking for. He had a good breakout age, high draft pick, solid college dominator rating, and a good speed score with his heavy weight. There are a lot of targets to go around on the Jaguars behind Chark, and the Jags, I believe, have the lowest projected win total, so they will be behind and throwing in a lot of games. Shenault is kind of a dark horse to lead this rookie class in targets, and look, his player profiler most comparable player is AJ Brown. So you look at his comps, you look at his situation, and there's a lot to like about Shenault, and maybe he's an arbitrage play on a CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy, who are going a lot earlier in fantasy drafts.
And Visca, I think, is the guy who's most likely to be this year's Deebo Samuel, in that, first of all, he was always a similar college prospect to Deebo, where they got him the ball out of the backfield, sometimes even in the wildcat. They got him in on screens, slants, and even deep routes. He could definitely be this year's Deebo Samuel, in that he's a guy who you could, you know, halfway through the season and on, you could start in your flex spot in a pinch, and maybe even every week. I absolutely love this guy. Dalton, what do we think about Shenault? Did you have anyone different in this round as well?
I did. And you guys know me. I don't know if there's too many.
You love Laviska.
Love Laviska more than me. But this came down to actually my two favorite, you know, late round receivers.
I know exactly who it is.
And
it is James Washington.
It's James Washington. So I'm going to make the argument for James Washington over Laviska Shenault. And reason being is we know rookie receivers aren't necessarily getting the targets that we ideally want to see. Versus a guy like James Washington, who last year, there's a lot of solid indicators that we can see from him. First of all, we know Pittsburgh is likely a more high-powered passing offense than Jacksonville. We also know that James Washington has proven being efficient and a good receiver in the NFL. Last year, he was the most efficient wide receiver on the Steelers, and by a good margin, over a guy like Juju and Deontay Johnson.
Just quickly, how do you measure efficiency, just for our listeners?
Yards per target. So within the context of the offense, per target, yards per target, James Washington had 9.3 yards per target. Both Juju and Deontay Johnson had under 8 yards per target. So he had a pretty big gap in efficiency there. And Big Ben is fully going to be back there healthy. James Washington was a second-round pick who was extremely productive at Oklahoma State, has very good weight profile, 215 pounds. So he prototypes as someone who can be an alpha in an offense. Also, James Washington last year is just a good player that you want on the field. If we look at pass interference yards, I'm not sure they matter too much in terms of fantasy, but in terms of just like actual NFL, he had the second most pass interference yards in the league. Per target, which is pretty impressive for him because he's a big physical guy. So there's a lot of things like by James Washington as a player, as well as a wide receiver in a high powered offense where guys are like a Deontay Johnson is going, you know, 7-8 rounds ahead of James Washington, where I can make the argument that James Washington may be just as valuable as him heading into year three. We know a lot of breakouts happen into year three. And I think he's just being written off because, you know, by year two, you ideally want to see a guy really break out. And there were circumstances last year with a Devlin Hodges and a Mason Rudolph that kind of held James Washington back in a sense from reaching that breakout. But the fact that he was efficient with those quarterbacks should say a lot about the talent of a guy like James Washington.
And I don't exactly know how to value this. I don't think it can be a good sign, but I don't know if it's super bad that Mason Rudolph was his college quarterback and he kind of chose Deontay Johnson over him in the NFL in terms of targets. James Washington is that rare double arbitrage play where he's an arbitrage play on both Juju and on Deontay Johnson, who are going way,
and maybe
way
on, earlier. And maybe on Big Ben.
And yeah, maybe on Big Ben as well, where you're just taking the cheapest option on an offense that you know is going to pass a lot. Mike, what do you think about James Washington? Are you as bullish as on him as Dalton is?
Yeah, I was torn like Dalton. These are two guys that I will alternate taking. I think that he's a really good arbitrage play on Deontay. Deontay goes in round 7. He was moving up to round 6. I imagine maybe he'll move down with this calf injury that he's dealing with. But it's possible that Washington makes a good impression in camp and maybe rotates with him as the 2. But there's a lot to like in Washington's profile. And the age gap between the two of them is only half a year. So it's not like James Washington is some old, washed up guy. He's an ascending wide receiver that checks a lot of the boxes we were looking for and may have had a year or two breakout if Deontay wasn't there or Big Ben didn't get injured. So in round 16, James Washington is definitely a guy to target.
No question. Dalton, round 17. Round 17 was a round where we might have chosen Jalen Hurd. Unfortunately, not an option anymore. Who did you have? And I bet I know who it is.
It's a tricky one, honestly. And there's two guys I was choosing between. And for me, it came down to a guy like T. Higgins. So I chose T. Higgins over a guy like Bryant Edwards. For me, it's about the passing offense. I want to invest in the offense that I think is going to be more high-powered, and I think that's going to be the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, the receiving room for the Bengals is a little bit crowded, but when I'm looking at, you know, rookie receivers this late in drafts, or just receivers in general late in drafts, like I want guys who have the upside in the second half of the year as we're approaching playoffs that are really going to start hitting their stride. I remember last year, or 2 years ago, it was a guy like DJ Moore and Cortland Sutton. You know, in the second half of the year, they really started hitting the stride. And they're actually guys that you could start for your playoff teams. And last year, obviously, guys like Deebo Samuel, Terry McLaurin, DK Metcalf, and AJ Brown, those are guys that you could actually plug into your lineup and play. So these guys in the first half of the year, but if you're in a deeper league and you have the opportunity to stash rookie receiver, I think a guy like T. Higgins is someone who's extremely interesting. You know, he checks nearly all the boxes that we're looking for in a wide receiver prospect. First of all, he was the first pick in the second round, so he has strong draft capital. He's tied to a guy like Joe Burrow, who we think is going to be a good quarterback in an offense that, you know, ran more 3 wide receiver sets than any other team in the league last year. So for him as a rookie, there's opportunity for him to see the field. And as a prospect profile, he's an early declare, which we like. He's 21 years old. He had an 18-year-old breakout age according to Player Profiler. He weighs 215 pounds, so he has good size profile. So really a ton of things that we like to see in a receiver. And I think T. Higgins, you know, at some point in his career is going to be one of the better receivers in the league. For me, it's just about him seeing the opportunity and getting the chance to prove himself. And I think that, you know, as the season goes on, we're really going to see that from him.
Dalton, it's clear that you didn't see that Auden Tate is the offensive MVP for Bengals training camp. But
not like Auden Tate as well, man. Give me
he was awesome last year.
There's a lot of guys there. No, I like T. Higgins. Obviously, production in year one for rookies is a little bit tricky. The guy that I had for round 17 was Irv Smith Jr. In a year of really remarkable late round tight ends that obviously we've mentioned throughout this podcast, Irv Smith is kind of being ignored. He's a solid athlete out of Alabama. He out-targeted Kyle Rudolph per game as a rookie, which is very difficult to do at a position like tight end. And generally top 100 pick tight ends break out early in their career in like year 2. So I think he's a nice opportunity as kind of an arbitrage play on somebody like Fant or Hockenson, where he's also a guy that was a really high selection, performed well in year 1. And there aren't a lot of other options there. We've heard that Justin Jefferson has kind of been struggling in camp according to beat writers, and maybe there is a decent chance that Irv Smith finishes as the number 2 target on this team behind Adam Thielen, and he's available in round 17.
And even though it's not a super high powered passing offense, I mean, they're always efficient is the thing. Kirk Cousins is not a bad quarterback at all, but no more Diggs. And, you know, Irv Smith was really good last year. I think you mentioned he had 1 less target than Kyle Rudolph last year and more targets per game than Kyle Rudolph. I had Bryan Edwards in this round, and Dalton wrote a great article about Bryan Edwards that I'll link to in the show notes for the Apex Insider blog. I don't know exactly. Now, Tyrell Williams did just tear his labrum. He's played through this injury before. We don't know how effective he will be. But the pro is that Tyrell Williams, if he doesn't play, Bryan Edwards, great prospect, will be the deep threat for the Raiders. Of course, the con is, if you watch any Raiders games and the analytics back this up, the deep threat on the Raiders ain't exactly seeing a ton of volume. He's probably a better pick for your dynasty teams, but still a non-zero chance he is fantasy relevant. Why don't we go to the last round? And this includes some undrafted guys. I chose Sexy Rexy. I chose Rex Burkhead for the reason that I'm going to take the cheapest option in this backfield, right? We have absolutely no idea. I think Damian Harris is the favorite, and he is a much sexier pick, ironically, than Sexy Rexy, but we aren't 100% sure. So, you know, a guy like Sean Siegel, who we all really respect, would say, when we're unsure, we take the cheapest option. And Rex Burkhead was a guy a couple of years ago was going in the fourth, fifth round of drafts as the possible lead back on this offense. And there's a non-zero chance that he could be seeing 12 touches a game. And we don't know if Damian Harris is going to catch passes. We know Burkhead will if he's the guy. So why not take a flyer in round 18 on an offense that could bear some real fantasy fruit with a backfield that's really not settled?
Look, it really depends on your roster composition. And obviously, we're all big advocates for zero running back. So on a lot of our teams, our weakest position is going to be our running back two. And in week one or early in the season, when there's a lot of uncertainty, maybe the Patriots want a veteran like Burkhead on the field, and he's arguably the cheapest source of running back touches early on in the year. He'll probably fade as the year goes on, but he is a very interesting late round target, and he's actually not even going in round 18. He's going undrafted in Apex Leagues. Another interesting guy that I wrote down is Ito Smith. Obviously, Todd Gurley already isn't practicing, and there are a lot of concerns about his health. And if he were to be injured, I think that Ito Smith is the best of the bunch. We saw Brian Hill get an opportunity, and he was not impressive. And it's not that I think Ito Smith is an unbelievable player, but like Burkhead, he could be a cheap source of a lot of running back touches.
Dude, don't diss the counselor, Mike. Todd Gurley is playing 16 games.
I had Burkhead here as well. And for me, he's someone who in an backfield, especially, you know, since Michelle has his concerns about playing week one right now, like that puts all these running backs for the Patriots into question of who the guy is going to be. And we've known for the past few years always been the cheapest guy. You know, we saw James White a few years back, LeGarrette Blount even before then. But Burkhead going undrafted is interesting to me, and I think that it's just probably like recency bias with not saying, you know, Burkhead do much. But if we look at, you know, 2 years ago, Burkhead was this quote unquote breakout guy. Didn't necessarily happen for him. But last year we saw Burkhead in his first three games. Now he got hurt in his fourth game. But if we look at the first three games, he was out snapping every other Patriots running back. And by a solid margin too, he had 22 more snaps than James White. And, you know, that was when Sony Michel and James White were on the field. So he's the veteran there. I don't think we should be surprised at all if he's leading the snaps again at the beginning of the season. So for a guy considering, you know, you're getting him in the last round of drafts, like, look, you just draft him, you see how it plays out week one. If he's not getting the snaps, you drop them. But there's an opportunity for him to be the guy there for the Patriots in week one.
Yeah, I really loved doing this exercise, and I'm glad we waited a week to do it. And we had Sean in between, parts one and two for this, because we got to see a lot of how training camp played out with beat writer reports. And we're talking about kind of quote unquote sleepers and flyers that we're taking. I want to do one other thing and kind of our takeaways from this. My main takeaway from this was that don't really panic if you don't get a top four tight end. Obviously it's an advantage, but just from doing this exercise, I really noticed that there are a lot of quality tight end breakouts available in later rounds. And I think the smart play is to not just take one, but to take, like, if you miss on early time, take three, right? Take Fant, Hawkinson, and Herndon, add in Jonnu Smith in there, add in Irv Smith in there. There are so many guys late round that if you can make room on your roster to carry three tight ends at the beginning of the year, one of them is more than likely going to be an every week starter that should keep you afloat. I'm not saying they're going to be Kittle, Ertz, Kelsey, Andrews, but you know, maybe it's an argument to pass on the Hunter Henrys and Evan Ingrams and Darren Wallers in the sixth, seventh rounds in order to stack up on running backs and wide receivers. What did you guys learn from doing this exercise?
I want to add one thing to your point. I think it's important to note that just because you're taking a tight end doesn't mean that you can only start them at your tight end position. I targeted Mark Andrews in a lot of drafts last season, and you were only too happy to start him as your flex. Obviously, my teams have a very strong wide receiver at the flex, so it isn't as easy to get somebody like that in, but you will be happy if your Fant, Hawkinson, Herndon, Irv Smith selection pays off. In terms of what I learned from this podcast, I think that we all have very similar viewpoints, and I was able to predict the players that you guys were able to predict. So I didn't learn a whole lot, but a lot of our points are based off of what we learned in training camp. So I think it's very important to pay attention to what the beat writers are saying without having preseason. This is one of our ways that we can learn about what's going on with these players that we're drafting.
Dalton, what about you?
One thing that I took away was, there's really not too much wide receiver depth once you get into double digit rounds. You mentioned a couple guys that are interesting, but for the most part, a lot of the positions that we were talking about were running backs and tight ends, which, you know, if we are liking these guys at value in the back end of drafts, and if you're reverse engineering your drafts from the back all the way to the front, and you're seeing the values at running back and tight end in the later half, that means that it's probably best to, you can maybe wait on some of these positions there. Now, I still advocate for going early tight or early tight end, and I think pairing one of these guys up with a Kelce or a Kittle can absolutely help you smash this year. But it also shows that there's good running backs. Like we mentioned, like in the 11th, 10th through 12th round, you're getting Zach Moss, Pollard, Henderson, Chase Edmonds, Duke Johnson, Boston Scott. Those are all guys that have a lot of interesting profiles. Bryce Love, Damian Harris. So there's a lot of guys there that have the potential to be guys that you're starting week in and week out, whereas these wide receivers weren't as necessarily prevalent in our list, which you would probably be better to go ahead and draft them early in drafts.
Certainly. I think that's an important takeaway that people need to note. It's a really good idea to reverse engineer your draft. We've talked about it before on this podcast, but if you know who you want to target in the late rounds, it's going to help you with your roster construction. So we have the Apex ADP up on our website. If you can't find it, feel free to contact us. But if you know where players are being drafted and you know who you want to select at the end of your draft, it's going to help you decide who you want to take in the middle rounds or maybe even with your early picks. So definitely check that out. Definitely reverse engineer your draft and try and figure out what's the optimal roster construction for you.
No question. Mike, Dalton, as always, excellent advice. Be sure to rate and review our podcast. We welcome feedback. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. Email us at apexfantasyfootballleagues@gmail.com. Hopefully this got you excited to draft. And if you are, again, no better place to draft a fantasy team than Apex Fantasy Leagues. We have every kind of league that you would want. So with the best payouts. So just make sure to check that out at apexfantasyleagues.com. From Mike, Dalton, and myself, Asher, thank you for listening to the Apex Fantasy Football Podcast.